Hi there, it's Nick here. Thanks so much for your continued support of the Nick Luck Daily Podcast. Now, I know I've urged you on more than one occasion in the past to check out the racing app. And if you're a fan of US horse racing, as you know I am, never has this been more important, because the US service on the racing app is truly terrific. Not just the cards, very easily accessible for the day's racing, but also the video past performances, which are available completely free of charge, irrespective of any betting accounts, but also available at just one click. It's all there at your fingertips. If you are not resident in the United States and are a massive fan of American racing, this is the place you need to be. The Racing App. Download it today. You're listening to Nick Luck Daily. This edition is brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis. By the Racehorse Owners Association. And by the Racing App, in partnership with FitzDares. Good morning, welcome to the show. Monday, April the 8th. Packed show for you today as well. Here in TW11, the weather is clement. Not necessarily such a settled forecast in the lead-up to the Grand National. It is Grand National Week, something in which we should always rejoice if we're lovers of the sport, but which every year comes with its attendant sideshow of debates over the viability of the race and indeed the sport as a whole. Whilst I'm editing today's podcast, I've got half an eye on Sky News, and I'm currently watching Kevin Blake dismantle Ben Newman from Animal Rising bit by bit, which is very satisfying if you are a lover of horse racing, and particularly satisfying if you are someone who really appreciates strong advocacy on behalf of the horse. But it's nonetheless very frustrating that I'm having to stare at a lower third, a strap line on the bottom of Sky News coverage saying, is it now time to ban horse racing? As if this is something that is a part of the quotidian concern of the British public, which we all know it is absolutely not. But still, superb from Kevin once again, as you'd expect. So at least one certainty has gone in this week. Blake beats Newman, hands down. Paul Byrne might be the man with the key to the Grand National, the owner of one of the runners and former owner of two of them. He tells me which of the three he thinks has the best chance in the race a little bit later in the programme. And this is a show that has to go far and wide, because this morning we woke up to the extraordinary news of a record-breaking purchase of a yearling filly in Australia. When I tell you her pedigree, by Piero out of the greatest race mare, Winx, it won't surprise you. She is a filly. She was bought for $10 million Aussie dollars by her already part owner, Debbie Capitis, who outbid the extraordinary swashbuckling American, John Stewart. So we speak to Debbie later in the show as well. Now she's had a chance to cool down a little bit. Shamey Heffernan, what a weekend for him, winning the Ballysack Stakes at 50-1 on a horse owned by Ammo Racing, trained by Adrian Murray. He tells me just how satisfying that was. And that's before I even mention Frankie Dettori, who rode six consecutive winners at Santa Anita on Saturday evening and was just denied the chance to equal Lafitte Pinkeye's all-time record by being nosed out of the Santa Anita Derby itself. Remarkable. And Aidan Coleman, we must pay tribute to his amazing career in the saddle, which injury has sadly stemmed. More of that later in the show. The star equine performers, however, on the racecourse this week was Sierra Leone in the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland, who produced a really muscular performance, circling the field to win one of the final really recognised trials for the Kentucky Derby. A notable speech was brilliant at Kempton, a horse you might not have heard much of previously, but certainly chiselled his way into Guinea's reckoning, even in a strong year for Charlie Appleby, who has started the campaign with some quite promising results for Godolphin. One piece of news that's just dropped, however, that won't be met with such widespread approval is the fact that the Jockey Club, in the face of what they describe as strong financial headwinds and a worse-than-expected performance at the Cheltenham Festival, have had to cut prize money for the back end of this year. Their chief executive is Nevin Truesdale. I began by asking him, just to what scale?
Yes, good morning, Nick. As you say, definite move towards some reductions from what was originally intended. We're back in line with 2023 numbers. So we planned originally an executive contribution of $31.8 million. That will now be 31.1 million. So that's a reduction of about 750,000 across the rest of the year for executive contribution. And that, what that leads to, by the time you take entry and levy impacts into account, is a reduction of 1.5 million from what was originally intended. As I say, back in line with 2023 levels, difficult, regrettable decision, and part of, you can, as you can imagine, of a wider sort of cost reduction plan. You know, prize money is one of the last places we want to go in all of this, but a difficult but necessary step.
Right, so what else are you cutting in terms of costs across the group? I mean, prize money, as you say, is going to be the headline because that is something that people like to talk about and it's the easiest metric by which to judge your performance. But how is this going to impact your customers on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's general cost efficiency reductions across the group. I don't think customers are going to see a huge difference, to be honest. It's all, we're constantly looking at different ways of running, operating the business, both from a back office, from a front office point of view. We're looking at sort of the different areas of investment in our community projects, different ways of more efficient ways of running waste days. There's a whole host of different things that we're doing that, frankly, we were doing anyway. As we seek to make our business and make our operation more efficient, especially in these troubled times. So we're always doing that with a view to minimising the impact on prize money, which is just so important for the industry.
Are there obvious places where this prize money is going to be cut from?
Well, what we're looking to do, Nick, is to try and spread the impact sort of across the whole programme. So what you will see, when, first of all, we're maintaining group and grade one values. I think it's very important to maintain those top level values. There'll be no changes to any of those races. But you'll see some changes to the big handicaps in the autumn. The Beecher Chase, for example, the Cambridgeshire. We're also going to be running five previously planned premier fixtures as core fixtures. So what that produces is a required level of executive contribution to those fixtures. So there's five of those across five different venues at various points in time in the autumn.
So already, but 3 months into the premierisation experiment, we're beginning to chip off the premier racing block and say, effectively, the country's most high-profile and biggest racecourse group can't afford to run premier fixtures. It's a pretty shambolic state of affairs, isn't it?
Well, I'm not sure it's symbolic. I mean, I think it's just a signal of where we're at in terms of the overall impact on sort of cost of living crisis and some of the trading headwinds that we're facing, but not just as a business, but I think as a whole sport. And certainly, I think we're certainly in debating with the BHA and others at the minute about the number of premier fixtures and the prize money thresholds for those for next year. Whilst we're trying to obviously maintain top end values in a group in grade one, as I say. So I think we have to make difficult choices, not just as a business, but as a whole sport. And I think that's what we're doing here.
I know you have debated the rights and wrongs of this year's Cheltenham Festival probably till you're blue in the face, but they're going to come to the surface again because of this announcement. So if you can't make the Cheltenham Festival a roaring commercial success, what can you do?
Well, I think just on Cheltenham for a second, you know, I think we have to step back and say there are definitely things we can improve, and obviously we're looking at, and those are much debated. But you know, we still had 230,000 people at Cheltenham. We still sold more hospitality in revenue terms than we've ever sold. We had probably a better group of commercial partners and a record financial performance around that than what we've ever had. So you know, let's look at the sort of. Let's look at Cheltenham in a more sort of balanced way. But I think for us and for all of us, it's been looking to continue to increase the appeal of the sport. You know, looking at how we get more people through the door, looking at clever areas around how we can be nimble with our discounting, with our customer experience, with our online offers. You know, there's so many different things as a business and a sport we should be doing, not just to grow the big festivals, but to grow the day-to-day fixtures as well. And indeed, we're actually seeing some decent performance in our family days and in some of our other fixtures across the board. But obviously, it's hard for us to ignore what was ultimately a disappointing Cheltenham in overall, you know, general admission terms, despite still having 230,000 people through the door over 4 days.
It's all relative to your expectation, relative to your projection. I get that. Yeah. What fixture so far in this quarter or in your recent memory has performed significantly above your expectations, or even just above your expectations?
Our entire Easter weekend. to put it very, very, in very, very crude and recent terms, every single of our family fixtures and our Saturday fixtures at Easter weekend were above our expectations. Now, in relative terms, obviously, you know, the Haydocks, the Carlisles, the Huntingdons are not going to fill a gap that Cheltenham has caused for us, but we can see some quite significant strong performances there, and actually we're looking at some pretty decent forward projections for the Derby as well at this point. Obviously a long way to go with that because the sales curve on the Derby is very, very late. So there are definitely some green shoots there, but we're having to look at this whole thing on the round and also taking into account the ongoing impact of affordability on our online revenues as well. It makes the world still a very uncertain place.
And for the vast majority of our listeners, Nevin, cuts to prize money the back end of this year are not going to meaningfully affect them. Disruption to the Grand National may well meaningfully affect them. Animal Rising have said that they're not going to campaign aggressively against horse racing in the foreseeable future. Do you believe them?
I think in a word, Nick, we have to take that assertion with distinct scepticism. We are ready for whatever may happen. I think we know that Animal Rising are actually a very loosely organised group. And therefore, even if the leaders say that we're not going to do X or Y, I think there's always the chance of renegade splinter groups. So I take what was in the piece, in Greg's piece in The Guardian last week, with a distinct pinch of salt. We will be ready. We will be ready as we were last year. In fact, if anything, we're more ready this year because we've had the learnings, not just from Entry last year, but obviously also from Epsom. We need to be prepared for anything. We just hope it doesn't happen. We hope they choose not to break the law, not to disrupt the race for thousands on course and the millions watching. And indeed, you know, our fantastic teams who put so much into organising these events, to have them besmirched and ruined like that is pretty shocking. So we hope that they'll be as good as their word and desist from that. But we have to be ready for any eventuality.
And so have you invested the same amount more than you did 12 months ago?
Yes, we have. And, you know, again, that's not decisions we take lightly either, because obviously that affects, again, our financial position, what we've just been talking about. So we've had to make these calls, we've had to make these decisions, but ultimately we have to have the event show everything we've done. We've done everything we can to make the event go ahead and to make sure that it happens. So we've got to be in a position. We've done everything we possibly can.
That was Nevin Truesdale, Chief Executive of the Jockey Club. This is David Yates, newsboy from the Daily Mirror. David, I wasn't anticipating starting Randox Grand National Week with an industry story of this nature, particularly not from the parent company of Aintree Racecourse. But there you are. This is what we have, and this won't go down terribly well. What were your thoughts on what Nevin had to say?
On the Monday of Grand National Week, a good time to bury bad news. We're told that the prize money levels will revert essentially to what they were in 2023. The increases essentially, which were 2.3% for 2024, will not be there for the rest of the year. So I don't think that is a particular shock. There will be debate as to whom should be hit by the 2.3% drop. He mentioned the Beecher Chase and the Cambridgeshire as two handicaps which will be affected, and also of course he said that the grade and group one races would not be affected. For those of us who thought that 170 as a number of premier race days was too big, well, we have got our reduction, although not in the manner perhaps that we affected, that we expected. We all know that things are going to potentially get worse before they get better, with the spectre of affordability checks that continues to hang over the sport. Interestingly, that Nevin Truesdale did put a little positive spin towards the end of the interview when talking of green shoots. Now, we know very well, and he made no attempt to pull the wool over our eyes, that an uptick in attendances at Haydock, Carlisle, Huntingdon, as he mentioned during the Easter period, is a drop in the ocean when it comes to talking about the downturn in numbers from the Cheltenham Festival. The pretty decent forward projections for Epsom, again, nothing like as big a revenue driver as Cheltenham. I suppose they're encouraging in some way, although if I say to you, yes, we've got pretty decent forward projections for something, then I don't think it prompts you to go out and buy a flashy new sports car.
David talked a little bit with Nevin at the end of that interview about Animal Rising. Do you share his caution as regards whether they turn up this weekend or not?
Even if Animal Rising say, well, we're not going this year, there are going to be protesters outside. There always are. Will they be emboldened and informed by what happened last year? Well, yeah, they certainly will, because for those of them waving placards opposite the entrance to the race course, a few might think, I'll tell you what, we could get round those perimeter fences and use some wire cutters. We could actually get on the track. So it's not as if the protest against the Grand National is exclusive to Animal Rising. It really isn't. And so on Friday, when the Jockey Club said they were planning for all eventualities, I don't think that was something that surprised any of us. And of course, for those of us who love the National, who were distressed and dismayed by what we saw at Aintree last April, that's a welcome message. We know that the security has to be, in tabloid terms, beefed up at Aintree. It was before Animal Rising, and it will be after Animal Rising too.
All right, onwards then. Let's talk about the Randox Grand National. You might think that Willie Mullins has the key to the race. You might think that Gordon Elliott has the key to the race. Maybe Lucinda Russell with last year's winner, Corak Rambler. I'd say the man who might just have the way of unlocking this year's puzzle is Paul Byrne. He did own Noble Yates, the winner 2 years ago, before he sold that horse to Robert Whaley Cohen, for whom he won the race with his son Sam, of course. He did own Meeting of the Waters before that horse ran a terrific race at Cheltenham for JP McManus and is now amongst the favourites for this year's Grand National. And he still does own, in partnership with Justin Carthy, Mr. Incredible, a mercurial horse who sometimes doesn't want to start races, but when he does, stays all day and loves the mud. Paul Byrne, which of the three did he think might emerge on top?
For me, I think Meeting of the Waters has the profile that I think you want for the modern National. It's not the race it used to be. I think when Noble Yates won it, seven-year-olds was a negative, but I think now a seven-year-old novice is on the way up and has a bit in hand. There's a lot of, when you go through these races over the years, a lot of 9 and 10-year-olds that don't have much in hand. I think he's progressive. And going forward, I think he's the one. If you were to say next year, could he be rated a bit higher than he is now? I would think for sure. I'm a little bit worried he's just a bit keen. He was keen at Cheltenham. That's the negative for him. If he settles, I think he's an outstanding chance. He's the one I would pick. Obviously, Mr. Incredible, I just don't know how much he has in hand. I mean, he's a bit higher than last year. He had a great run near Toxeter, and he'll improve a lot for that. But it's just wondering how much higher can he go? Is he going to be a 160-odd horse next year? I don't think he will be. But he will love the ground. He'll stay, he'll jump, and just hopefully he starts.
Yes, because he clearly does have, as I said, something of the night about him. But he looked on best behaviour at Utoxeter last time, and
he looked great.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be overkill on it, but like the work that Patrick Mullins has put into this horse to get him going, as I said, when he arrived, he was a write-off. He wouldn't do anything. And in typical Mullins stubbornness, he just stuck at it, and he takes a lot of time out of his day. But what he's done with this horse has been unbelievable, really. He's been on behaviour every start for Patrick, but he takes a lot of precautions with him, make sure he's quite meticulous in his preparation to make him go. So obviously the standing start this year will be something, probably a negative for him. I know he told me he practiced it during the week and was fine with it. But with this horse, you just don't know. It's sort of whatever way he gets up out of bed in the morning.
I think I might take my chances if the rain keeps falling, for sure. And of course, we
in running bet, Nick.
Yeah, Well, after about 10 yards, yes, price halves. I suspect JP McManus, to whom you sell plenty of horses, might be backing Mr. Incredible as an insurance bet anyway, because you haven't managed to sell this one to him yet.
No, I couldn't stand over this one, really, in terms of, I couldn't. If I'm ever to have a big race success, it'll be with a character like this type of fellow that is sort of unsellable.
I'm more interested, I suppose. We can talk about the chance of these horses till we're blue in the face, and everyone can see who they are and what they are. I suppose I'm more interested from you in how you're going to feel watching this race. You know, Noble Yates, you sold to the Whaley Cohens before that famous triumph. We've talked about Meeting of the Waters, Mr. Incredible running in your own silks. Where will you be looking? What will you be thinking? How do you get your head around this whole deal?
Oh, just with great excitement, and you sort of have to count how lucky I am to be able to go there with such a... It's a unique year to have so many sort of connections with horses, because there'll be, you know, in this game, Nick, you'll be in the doldrums long enough, it could be 10, 20 years before you get into this type of position again. So just enjoy it, and that's really it, and embrace the excitement of it. It's a great spot to be in, and sort of pinching myself, really.
And to what extent now is this the business? Is it business, or can it be pleasure as well?
No, it's about doing it, enjoying what I do, because I absolutely love it, without losing as much money as it should cost.
That's a lovely way of putting it.
Yeah, no, it's not. I think if you were to go into your bank and say this is a business, they'd laugh at you. So no, it's not a business. It's about doing what I love with trying to do it without costing absolute bombs. So get enjoyment out of the horses, take them to a level. I've had my fun, and let someone wealthier than me take it from there.
Interesting stuff there from Paul Byrne. I think from that, David Yates, I'll deduce that Meeting of the Waters is the one that he thinks will run the best of the ones he owns or formerly owned. But a lot of that hinges on whether Mr. Incredible fancies lining up and taking to the job, I suppose.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, it's incredible to have a connection with three horses who have got strong chances in a race like the Grand National, isn't it? I mean, I suppose the strange thing is Noble Yates of the trio is probably the least likely of the trio, even though he won the race 2 years ago. Mr. Incredible is certainly interesting, though, Nick, isn't he? Yes, he was that. Well, I've called him a tearaway former tearaway in my pen picks for this weekend, and he was arguably worse than that when he was with Henry de Bromhead. Willie Mullins seems to have turned Mr. Incredible round in a mental capacity, but I agree with many people that Meeting of the Waters is probably the most likely of the trio. Marginally, he's a horse who's light on experience. He's had 6 starts over chases, but he seems to be following a pretty steep learning curve. He won that race at Leopardstown over Christmas that's been quite a decent guide to the Grand National in recent years. And the way that he ran at Cheltenham in the Ultima, he was 3rd behind Chianti Classico. That was a lovely trial for Aintree. So I think marginally he's probably the strongest of the three, but certainly a recent winner 2 years ago, a horse that was 2nd in the Midlands Grand National and loves the mud, and a horse who ran a fine 3rd at Cheltenham. Again, a pretty obvious place to look at when one's trying to find winners of the Grand National. Shows what a strong hand that Paul Byrne's got here.
All right, from Aintree to Australia, and our Australian racing coverage is powered by OzHorse, the power of passion. Invest where racing matters. And today, there was one massive investment, and it came on the part of Debbie Kapitis, already the part owner of Winx, and indeed her first living progeny, a daughter of Piero, now a yearling. Debbie went to $10 million Australian dollars to purchase this filly outright from her partners in the horse, and in so doing, not only smashed an Australian record, but also outbid John Stewart, the Kentucky-based businessman who has been a remarkable force in bloodstock the last couple of years, and an unusual one as well. Stewart had himself declared that he would bid this amount in order to secure this filly, and so this is what Debbie Kapitis knew she was up against. And Debbie joins me now. Debbie, have you ever experienced anything quite like this, even with all your extraordinary days on the race course with Winx?
No, not really. It's very stressful. It was as stressful as a race, but it was a lot longer because it's been probably in the last week or so. It's just built up so much. It was exhausting, exciting, and wonderful. Fabulous ending.
Tell me what you thought when you heard John Stewart publicly declaring that he would go up to $10 million Aussie dollars for this filly. I mean, what was going through your mind at that point, and what sort of decisions were you having to take yourself?
I just couldn't believe the man was stating that. It's a piece that I'd never ever heard of anyone in any auction declaring what they were going to bid like that. It's just an unusual thing to do. It did mean that I needed to rethink, and that's what my girls and husband and I, we sat down and we worked out what we thought we could do, and we just thought, no, we really want to have her. We want her to stay in Australia, not just for her racing, but for her breeding. And the only way to do that and to ensure that was for us to go on board and get her as best we could.
I mean, Debbie, we've spoken before, and you're not soppy. You're a smart, commercially minded person, but clearly there's an enormous amount of emotional investment in this whole process for you as well. How hard is it for you to separate those two things, or to think very clearly and rationally on one hand and yet be overwhelmed by this whole story on the other hand?
It's not easy to do. Emotion always takes over. But we love this filly, and business-minded. It's not the most clever business decision I've ever made, but she is a icon. She's a treasure from the most amazing racehorse that we've ever seen, and she's a filly. So it means that she's she is a trophy in herself, and hopefully, if she can't race, we'll find that out. She will be given every chance, but if she can't race, she can go on and be a broodmare. So yes. It's a large amount of money, and it's not the most sensible business decision, but you don't do racing just by business. You do it by heart and passion.
And tell me a little bit about the future of this particular story and what we can expect in the next two or three years, do you think?
Oh, look, she's exhausted, this beautiful girl. She has been parading. She had so many parades done in the last week. She deserves a good rest. So she's actually gone back to Coolmore, where she's always been, and she's going to have a week or two break, and then they'll break her in up there. And look, that's where the story starts. We see how she goes. You follow her temperament. She's going to Chris Waller, of course. We asked him that this afternoon, and he's able to take her on. And so she's by Piero. You doubt she's going to be an early two-year-old, but she'll be given her chance. So if she shows anything at all, she'll go to the races and we'll see how she runs, and then, wait and see. Everything to keep her good. The horse comes first, as it always did with Winx.
And Winx herself is in foal. That was announced just earlier this week, wasn't it? In foal to Snitzel, is that right?
Correct. Yes. No. We've held back announcing officially, but it's been out in the news this week. She's safely in foal. That doesn't necessarily mean you've got another foal on the ground, but it's exciting to think that she is in foal. She's an amazing mum. She did a great job producing and raising our little Winnie. So we're hopeful. And yes, she's in foal to Schnitzel.
Thanks so much, Debbie. I know you are massively in demand today. I doubt there's a single human being in Australia that hasn't tried to pin you down at some point or other, but I guess this is what you're in it for. You're enjoying the ride.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I don't like publicity, but this filly deserves to be showcased the way she is. And her mother was showcased. So what you go along with it and you enjoy it.
All right, that was Debbie Capitis, 10 million Aussie. And the most extraordinary thing about that story, David Yates, is this John Stewart, the Kentucky-based businessman who has roared into the game, you know, with braggadocio. Is that the right word?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the right word.
Yeah, in the last couple of years, and told everyone he was prepared to pay up to 10 million Aussie for the filly. So Debbie kind of knew what she was up against. Unusual, dramatic, emotional, bizarre, extraordinary, in some ways heartwarming scenes at English Sales.
Don't we love the drama of the sales ring? I suppose because despite the eye-watering sums that are spent, it's no guarantee of success. Well, this is the first foal of hers that has been offered at auction. She lost the first and then she failed to produce. So this is obviously a landmark moment. For those people who don't know much about Piero, the stallion, and I must admit I didn't, he was a multiple five-time Group 1 winner for Gay Waterhouse, and he competed in, 2011 and 2012. He's a Coolmore stallion in Australia and a very successful one. Let's hope that there is a successful future ahead, and we're not talking about, was it Seattle Dancer who was the most expensive?
Still holds the record, doesn't he, Seattle Dancer?
Yeah, I think so. That was 13 million. And
US, yeah.
And his career highlight, of course, was a victory in the Derrinstown Stud Derby trial, as it was in Group 2 in 1987.
And that leads me very neatly on, because we had a trial of sorts for that race and beyond yesterday at Leopardstown in the running of the Bally Sachs Stakes, the feature race there. And although it was a good afternoon for Aidan O'Brien and Coolmore elsewhere, they couldn't win this one. They couldn't win their 12th edition of this. And ironically, the race went to Shamey Heffernan, formerly part of the Ballydoyle team, now very much a freelance gun for hire, on the Ammo Racing-owned Adrian Murray-trained Dallas Star. Quite a nicely bred horse, but he went off at 50-1. Earlier in the afternoon, Heffernan, who's probably ironically had more column inches in the last 3 weeks than he had in 30 years at Ballydoyle, despite all his big race victories, had won a maiden race for Edward O'Grady, better known as a legendary jumps trainer, a legendary and venerable jumps trainer, no less. So I asked Shamey Heffernan just how much he'd enjoyed yesterday, and this was his response.
Yeah, no, it was brilliant. And listen, it's in those big races and classics you want to be riding, but I made a decision, and listen, I'm riding plenty of nice horses in plenty of different yards, and I'm keeping myself busy. So When you sit on one that's a little bit different or special or ready to go, you should have an idea.
So what were your expectations of this horse yesterday? A 50-1 shot, but we've seen this ownership outfit pull rabbits out of the hat more times than once this season.
Yeah, with the Ammo team, you know, I work with Robson and that in Ballydoyle. Listen, they know what they're doing. They work hard. And they just know the time of day. Kia and Murray, and it just works well together. If you go back to that horse's form, he'd some very, very good form. He was big and was 100% weak. So he had been working well. Listen, I was confident that he was going to fight out the finish. It wasn't any surprise to the team what he'd done. They're not afraid. If they have a horse working well, they'll aim high. And some horses don't show it for a couple of runs, but listen, I was pretty confident, and when I turned in, I knew it was going to take a good horse to get past me, because he found plenty for strong driving.
Mm. And he's from quite a good family as well. He wasn't that expensive, but he's from a good Wildenstein family of a Carol East and many more household names. It's sort of horse you think that could do a little bit better still and make up into a genuine sort of classic outsider.
Definitely, yeah. He probably is not a model for a 2-year-old type. Hensy needed the time and still managed to win and run very well last year. And his mind obviously is very strong because he was trained as a 2-year-old and done his bit. So listen, you still need him to keep improving and finding and the whole lot, but he does have a pedigree back to back kind of things up that he just might be a classic horse.
I thought it was rather lovely that you won the opening race as well, particularly for Edward O'Grady, who's so popular. Ecaroy Sacre, what sort of a horse has this legend, mainly of National Hunt Racing, got on his hands to go to war with this season?
Yeah, well, this story goes back about 2 months ago when Mr. O'Grady rang me and said, I have a 3-year-old that I think you should ride. So listen, I've ridden him plenty of times, and a lovely man that owns him, and we've been kind of planning this fella to win a maiden on a big day. So everything came together. By Wooden Bassett, handled a dig in the ground, wants to win. Listen, that wasn't that we had planned that, and it was just great that we pulled it off.
And it sounds like you are loving the early stages of being a bit of a gun for hire, helping people with projects, you know, sort of applying all your experience to lots of different little things. You sound like a bit of a new man.
I suppose the hunger is still there. And when people before used to ring me and say, I've got a horse, I was just too tied down and committed. And I rate horses when I rate them. And then I go back and I look at their pedigree to see if they have a kink or why they have a kink. Some horses can be lazy and need a dig. And then some horses, you go back and look at the pedigree and you say, well, we'll just be a bit cautious what we do with this. I'm really enjoying what I'm doing. And when you sit on so many horses, you should be able to identify the ones that are doing it a little bit easier and will find a bit more, or the ones that are just showing you a feel through being a bit nervous. Or, you know, some horses will give you a false feel and will work falsely, but I suppose with my experience I can nurture them along and advise people where to go, which tracks they'll handle, what conditions will bruise them, so just to wait. I'm still learning and I'm enjoying it, so long may it last.
Well, I mean, if you're still learning, I there's hope for all of us. Shamie, thanks so much for your time. Well done yesterday.
Thanks a million. Thank you for the support. Thanks. Okay.
All right, that was Shamie Heffernan. Talk about new lease of life, David Yates. And if he was worried that he might not be in massive demand, he need worry no more, because he clearly is, and he's going to make a big difference to a lot of people.
Yeah, it must have been a very satisfying weekend for Shamie Heffernan, mustn't it? You know, he wouldn't be human if he didn't enjoy the feeling of riding the winner of the Bally Sack Stakes aboard Dallas Star, with a couple of horses trained by former boss Aidan O'Brien in his wake, in the form of the Euphrates and Illinois. And yeah, I mean, when we were talking about this story a week or so ago on the Nick Luck Daily, I was perhaps a bit flippant in saying that you know, this was the equivalent of a someone work making millions in the city and then taking up flower arranging. It's going to be a lot more serious and a lot more fruitful than that in the case of Shamie Heffernan, isn't it? We know that from his time riding at Ballydore, what a talented rider he is. He's still got loads to offer. And this move has already produced rich dividends. And I'd be very surprised if those dividends aren't going to be replicated in the weeks and months that come. We know that he's, you know, from the news that's broken over the last week or so, we know that he's got some good trainers to ride for and some very good connections who will supply him with plenty of winners, and certainly winners at a high level too. And the events of the weekend have borne this out. And as I say, I think that's something that we'll see plenty more of in 2024, including, I should think, when he's able to defy the battalions from Ballydoyle.
Yeah, 11 times Aidan O'Brien has won the Bally Sack Stakes. And interestingly, Shamie Heffernan hadn't won one of them for him, which is quite unusual in that period. But he did win one yesterday, 50-1 shot, Dallas Star, for Adrian Murray. And Shamie Heffernan is not the only jockey enjoying a glorious autumn, because in any other normal day or normal week, Frankie Dettori knocking out six winners on the bounce, including a major stakes race in the Santa Anita Oaks at the Great Race Place over the weekend, would have dominated headlines. At one point on Saturday evening, he was threatening to break Lafitte Pinkeye's all-time record of winners on a single card at Santa Anita, which would have been simply mind-blowing when you think how long that has stood. So there you go. Just a couple of weeks after he got drilled into the dirt as a horse suffered a fatal injury after the line, David, and he walked away pretty sore, there he is riding a six-timer. I think we've said it all before, but there you have it.
We have, but another thing that's notable about this, Nick, is that this isn't just any old six-timer, is it? It's a six-timer on the Santa Anita Derby card. And although he didn't actually win the big race, he was second in that. Stronghold won it. Antonio Frezu, his compatriot, was the winning jockey, who then very touchingly dedicated that victory to the late Stefano Cerchi, another jockey from Italy. These six winners came on a marquee card. You know, it's not as if just like the Magnificent Seven in September 1996 was on the card of the Festival of British Racing, as it was then. This was again at a marquee meeting. It wasn't just that he booted home six winners in a row. He won races 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This wasn't just on a Saturday night at Santa Anita. It was the Santa Anita Derby card. So yeah, how many times have we said about Dettori that, you know, there are no more words? But this again, another landmark. This time last year, we were wondering whether he would retire or whether he wouldn't. He didn't retire. He relocated to America. And now, even at 53, he's still doing incredible things.
All right, one man who has had to call time on his riding career is Aidan Coleman. He's only 35 years old, multiple Grade 1 wins on Paisley Park and recently on John Bond, though that Grade 1 victory took a long time to come. Over 1,000 winners. He drew stumps with over 1,200, riding winners for over 110 different trainers. Horrific injury to his knee last June has forced him eventually to concede that he won't be able to ride again. He spoke to me very movingly and with great candour and fluency on Luck on Sunday yesterday on Racing TV. You can catch that whole interview on the Racing TV website and app. And here is a flavour of it.
It's scary. Like, I was in the gym last week, and I've told a few people that what was gonna happen today, and it was kind of a bit emotional, because it was kind of my last week as a jockey, and it's all I've ever kind of wanted for a long time, and it's kind of onto the next chapter now, and I've no idea what that is. I've never thought about it. Committed everything I had to being a jockey, and then I committed everything I had to the rehab, and now it's just a bit like, wow, there's a big bad world out there, and you know, I need a job. I need something to do, I need something to focus on, and yeah, scary time out of my life, but it'll be fine.
The Aidan Coleman there, and as I say, you can catch that full interview on the Racing TV website and app. And one of my favourite Aidan Coleman memories, and he hates it because he thinks people might think it to be contrived, but it couldn't be, really, because he got dumped into one of the fences at Aintree, and then he didn't realise, he'd forgotten clearly, that he was one of the first jockey cam guinea pigs when it was when the technology advanced a few years ago. And there were some wonderful scenes of him trying to find his horse, Benny's Mist, and get reunited with him and make sure he was okay. And it showed racing at its very best, in its very best light. And it's highly appropriate, really, that we should remember that in this week of all weeks, in Grand National Week, and particularly given what we were speaking about at the beginning of the programme with Kevin doing his sterling work on Sky once again. And to that end, I, and I'm sure many others, are really heartened that Horse Power, British Racing's new platform, is going live with its digital hub www.horsepwr.co.uk has become the central resource for horse welfare information. It's designed to share and promote the facts around welfare in horse racing and the life of a thoroughbred. And it brings together information on horse welfare in one easy-to-find, easy-to-read place. And crucially, with facts, and plenty of them, and data provided, and questions answered. Horsepower delves into those areas that racing has committed to improve, from reducing risk on and off the racecourse to better supporting horses when they leave the sport, which is something we've been hearing about an awful lot with the work that's been done on the Thoroughbred Census that we showcased on the podcast during the last couple of weeks. Now, the campaign's name, Horsepower, and that PWR acronym, which is at the end of the website, was derived from the ambition to better connect with people around purpose, welfare, and responsibility. I myself particularly like the first of those, purpose. I think it's important when you're talking about welfare, as we saw after the Grand National last year, to take a bold and confident approach, which puts the thoroughbred right at the front and centre of this entire campaign to promote its status and purpose as an equine athlete. I think it's incumbent on all of us, and to that end, I'd call on all of you to share and support the campaign where and when you possibly can. And you can do that by visiting www.horsepwr.co.uk, and the hashtag is horse, capital P, capital W, capital R. It's a cross-industry campaign led by the BHA and GBR, so British Horse Racing and Great British Racing, and it's supported by the independently chaired Horse Welfare Board and by the Jockey Club. So I'd urge you to get involved. The website again, www.horsepwr.co.uk, and hashtag your tweets, horse, capital P, capital W, capital R. This is British Racing's new Horsepower campaign. Right, David Yates, before we go, just dropped that the Betting and Gaming Council has a new chief executive. You'll remember a few weeks ago, Michael Duggar announced his intention to stand down, and then it was announced that he would slide into the chair of the Betting and Gaming Council, which left the CEO seat vacant, and that has been filled by Gráinne Hurst. Gráinne Hurst, who was formerly Corporate Affairs Director at Entain and has worked quite extensively in and around Westminster, most notably as a special advisor to Philip Davis, Sir Philip Davis now, and Esther McVeigh, when she was initially in cabinet. So Gráinne Hurst takes over as the chief executive of the Betting and Gaming Council at a pretty critical time, Dave.
Yeah, it's a crucial time, as you say. Gráinne Hurst, the thick end of a decade with Entain, and she's got some shoes to fill in the case of Michael Duggar. I'm just going to read you one quote from Gráinne Hurst here, Nick. This is from the Betting and Gaming Council website. Obviously, delighted to be joining, blah, blah, blah. My focus will always be on ensuring that we have a well-regulated industry which protects customers and looks after their interests. Well, good luck with that project.
All right, Dave, have you got a tip for me for today?
I have indeed. We go to Wolverhampton for the 7:30 race tonight, and it's New Image. It's a really interesting horse, this. A son of Frankel and Modern Look, who was a Group 2 winner in France. Two starts for Ger Lyons in Ireland a couple of years ago without winning. Gelded, 539 days off, turned up at Southall running for David O'Mara and won a maiden there in really good style. Now goes into handicaps off a mark of 80. I'm sure there's plenty more to come from this really well-bred four-year-old who is now starting to deliver. 7:30 race at Wolverhampton. Selection is number 2, New Image.
This is Grand National Week. This has been the Nick Luck Daily Podcast. That was Monday, the 8th of April. See you again tomorrow. Bye for now. You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you by Timeform, the trusted source of racing data and analysis, by the Racehorse Owners Association, and by the Racing App in partnership with FitStairs.